Okay, well, I guess we might as well get started. So welcome to Primordial Cosmology. A lot of people went to the ESPEC meeting, so we're, although the program is oversubscribed badly, we're a little smaller this week, but I think we'll have more fun because we'll have time to actually find the correct theory of all these things. So this is not a talk. This was just my first pass at the things we might like to talk about. Some of us we've already been discussing this morning. People should add things to this, first of all. We really have the expertise in the program to cover this whole range. Does anybody want to see something egregiously missing that you want to discuss right now? Because we can. It'll come out. But obviously, one of the things we're most interested in is how robust some of the results are. So if you're like me, you went straight to this. And I was quite happy to see m squared phi squared disfavored in favor of the more generic possibilities. But it's only two sigma, and there's been a lot of discussion about whether the various quote unquote anomalies, like the power asymmetry, which is like a 10% effect up here, if it's true. And so Ichiro and company found it first in WMAP, and then they seem to find it again. This and the low L in the power spectrum might mean that the constraints, for example, on R are less powerful than they look here. Anyone want to comment on this? This has been a
less powerful. Yeah, maybe you can explain. this was just a comment that was made to me by Anthony Chandler, that when we're looking at this plot, that the tensor to scalar ratio, when you constrain it from the temperature fluctuations, it also receives most of its power from low L. Mm-hmm. Precisely also the regime where the scale amplitude shows this anomalous lack of power. And so really, tensor to scalar ratio, as the name suggests, of course, is the ratio of the tensors and the scalars. So we're mixing up gravitational wave amplitude with the scale amplitude and normalizing it in the regime where the scalar is doing something slightly anomalous.
Yeah, so there are two possibilities. Either the anomaly is true or it's false. And if it's false, then R is being driven down because you can't, it just adds to the power in that regime. So you've artificially improved the constraints on it. If it's, on the other hand, if the anomaly is true, meaning it's not a statistical fluctuation, then you have to add some parameters to the model to cover it. It's not revolutionary.
Yeah,
it's probably some...
The amount by which the low L power is slightly lower is 10%, 20%.
Yeah.
So, at best, that will change the tensor scalarity by 10%, which is not, isn't really a big deal. 0.12. Still remains.
Wait.
10% of the total.
Yeah, 10% of the total.
So,
right.
R change by 0.1.
That's the worry. The worry is it's 10% of the total, right?
But it's tensor to scalar ratio, right? And you're changing the scalar amplitude by some factor.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if the anomaly goes away, so you're allowed 10% more, you could add some tensors.
And then I didn't.
I'm all of that with tensors.
I didn't
use an order one tensors.
Yeah, so the point he was making actually is that now the best fit value for R is negative, actually. So actually, to alleviate the anomaly, to add negative tensors, you're also suppressing power on that scale. And so that kind of also strengthens the bound of tensors because it'd like to make it smaller to not such a big anomaly in the lower
end. Right.
And so in fact, these constraints are better than what you would expect if you just extrapolate.
I remember that the best you can ever get from lower temperature is 0.15. So it's a little better, but not by a huge factor.
No, it's not a huge factor. Yeah, but, yeah.
Oh, that's a good point. Okay, so we just got started too quickly. We're supposed to introduce ourselves.
Not on the outside chance. Not everybody knows it.
Okay. I'm Eva Silverstein, and I'm interested in everything.
David. I'm David Bernstein, one of the locals, and I'm here to try to figure out what happened.
I'm Steve Shaker from Stanford. I'm interested in how quantum gravity, inflation coexist.
Thomas Serko from Leuven, Belgium. Interested in inflation, quantum cosmology, holographic cosmology.
I'm Daniel Baumann from Cambridge. I'm interested in therapeutic cosmology.
Pedro Komatsu from Max Planck Institute of Astrophysics in Munich. And I've been working on CMB over the last 10 years, especially on WMAP. Excited to see Planck results coming, but I'm not in Planck. So I'm happy to discuss this. And I'm usually interested in using cosmological observation like CMB and large scale structure to learn something about
I'm Andrew Liddell from University of Edinburgh in Scotland. I'm a theoretical cosmologist working on inflation, comparison of data, and other things. I am in Planck collaboration in a fairly minor role, mostly working on galaxy clusters rather than on primary scene.
Hi, I'm Gary Horowitz from the physics department here. I'm interested in applications of gauge gravity duality, everything from the Big Bang to
matter. I'm Mark Svetniki, also a local. I want to know what the correct theory is.
I'm Jim Hartle, also from Santa Barbara. I'm interested in part of the correct theory. Namely, what is the quantum state of the universe, and what does it predict for observations?
I'm the deputy director here, and I'm also interested in science that will be discussed in the program and what comes out. We look forward to it.
I'm Greg Huber. I'm actually a biophysicist, but I'm here in my capacity as the other deputy director.
I'm Dan Hahn, also from AITP, just here to learn about what the program.
I'm Douglas Stanford. I'm a grad student at Stanford. I'm also here for a few months. I'm interested in conceptual issues, quantum gravity, I guess.
I'm Will Kelly. I'm a local grad student here, interested in maybe a CFT.
George Shantos, I'm a local postdoc in the physics department, so moving to Stanford, and I'm interested in observations of holography to everything that moves through the universe.
I'm Shi Dong, I'm from Stanford. I'm interested in cosmology and holography and applications of
I'm Ahmed Al-Mahiri, I'm a local graduate student, interested in bipolar firewalls. Sorry about that.
I'm Benson Wei. I'm from the physics department here. I'm interested in applications of holography.
I'm Anatoly Zamarsky from Cambridge. I'm interested in the interplay between cosmology and energy physics.
I'm Jim Halverson. I'm a postdoc here, and I work on string identifications and gauge theories. I'm interested to hear the latest on this one.
I'm Dave Watson from the Math and Physics Department here. I'm interested in any place mathematics can have something useful to do with theoretical physics.
I'm Ken Kings, I'm a group guest who is interested in
thinking about physics. I'm Joe Polchinski. Lately, I'm interested in quantum mechanics of black holes as a way of understanding quantum gravity.
I'm
Annette
Gordy. I'm a local grad student interested in quantum mechanics.
I'm Steve Gidding from the local physics department, and I'm interested in what inflationary cosmology can teach us about quantum gravity.
I'm Ian Null. I'm mostly a particle phenomenologist working on dark matter. I'm here because I'm spending the year at KITP, and I'm interested in what's going on in cosmology.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Hoffman. I'm
I'm Gavin Harnett. I'm a graduate student here, interested in black holes in higher dimensions, ADS-CFT, and I'm really excited to hear about the new Planck results.
Okay, well, you'll hear more than you want to know about the new Planck results over the course of the meeting. As I said at the beginning, a lot of people actually went to the release meeting, so we're not going to have those folks right away, but starting next week. There's no agenda for today, just whatever people want to talk about. Any opinions on the significance of the anomalies? Chiro, do you find it compelling that Planck found the same thing that you guys did, or is it likely still to be foregrounds?
I don't think we really thought that these are due to foreground or systematic errors, but it's just harder to make of them when significance is lower than 3 sigma. And it's been about 10 years, we still don't have an explanation. And just that Planck found it the same thing doesn't mean that we can make progress on it. But of course, maybe now that Planck found the same thing, more people take it seriously and maybe we can find some plausible explanation for this. But I'm not sure what has changed.
Well, I guess it's harder to argue that it's due to foregrounds because Planck has many more frequencies.
But I'm not sure if that was ever really argued strongly that it was due to foreground or instrumental systematic errors. There's one thing that was, however, discovered really with high statistical significance, namely you have the power spectrum, which is usually isotropic, but there's an indication that this isotropic part is then modulated by something that's quadrupole, right? So if you look at ecliptic pole, then when they compare the power that you see in the ecliptic pole with the ecliptic plane, they give a different answer. So this Ackermann-Carroll Weiss parameterization.
So is this the same thing as just the power asymmetry between the two
this
sides?
This is not dipole. This is quadrupole. So it's not hemispherical.
But the dipole one goes up to high L, supposedly.
So let's talk about dipole later. But this quadrupolar modulation was found to be significant at 9 sigma in Dirac data. So there was clearly something going on. So, however, that turns out to be due to instrumental systematics. Namely, what this does is to make power spectrum anisotropic. And the sign of that is that things look more spherical in ecliptic poles, and things look asymmetric on the plane. And that's exactly what's caused by the fact that the W maps point to spread function, the beams are elliptical. And then W map scans in the ecliptic pole with different directions. So the beams circularize. So things get isotropic there, but on the plane, things don't get circularized. That's how W map scan search works. So the idea was really beautiful because this was predicted before W map. People look at W data, they will find 9 sigma. So that was really a remarkable thing, but then it turns out to be instrumental systematic. Now, Planck's scan strategy is different. So they looked at this quadrupolar modulation and didn't find anything. So that anomaly was identified in W and was thought to be instrumental systematic since gone.
Good, okay.
But now they have this dipolar modulation,
right,
which was also find before, but I think the new component here is that it extends to higher L's.
To higher L's, but then Chris Harada has some constraint using quasars.
Quasars, that's right.
He's sick today, but he will give a talk on that Wednesday, I think.
Yeah, so Mark Halenkowski wrote a paper very recently on this, and I think the conclusion is if you wanted to make a consistent picture taking into account this Chris Harada's quasar constraints, there aren't many options left, but you could perhaps conceive a theoretical model where the spectral tilt, say NS, is different between two hemispheres.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to me so wildly exotic to consider a situation. You do need an extra field, but with some initial condition that might suppress or increase by dot early on, and have a gradient that's a relic. That's not terribly exotic, but I guess the question is going to be whether it's consistent with the bounds on FNL. I mean, that's FNL local, right? So, I guess, a number of us are thinking about modeling this, but And since it's at high, it goes up to high L, there's a chance for it to become more and more significant, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's
the significance at this moment? Is it
I don't know.
On the edge of policing much?
Yeah.
The everything's on the edge of policing. Yeah, but kind of a suggestion. We're talking quite in a specialized way, but I
yeah.
read a room that people are quite general interest. I happen to have a Planck talk on my computer that I gave on the announcement day, and if people want to listen for about half an hour, I could summarize all the main results, and that might give them the context. Yes or no, your call?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. Anyone against?
It looks like if you take it at face value, it's like a 10% effect here. This is a thing that Cam Jankowski has been going on about for some years, up to L of like 64. Then it looks like it's kind of low, and then it rises again. And then later around 10,000, there's a bound on it of like a percent. So that's the pattern, supposedly.
And should we take that increase seriously, or is this?
It's 3 sigma now, but the nice thing about the high L's is that it's not going to be limited by cosmic variance, right? So there, it'll get better. And it's not an instrumental thing because it survived both experiments, whereas as the chair just reviewed, some things that were instrumental died. So, you know, it's interesting, it suggests a second field, but FNL local, the constraint on the non-gassy entity balanced that. So, I mean, you know, one of the interesting things one can do with the bounds on non-gassy entity is you turn them around and use them as precision constraints on lots of interesting possibilities, including hidden sectors. This is something that's been explored, and Dan Bauman is going to give us on that idea on Thursday. So. It's true. We're dominated by high energy theorists today. And so it's really up to people. Would you like to hear a nice, yes, there's a nod. Go for it.
I do need to get my dome move. Improvise for 2 minutes.
Is your end doing later today?
Later today?
It's doing now.
Is there a conflict?
No conflict. You just ask.
While we're waiting, your idea is there's a second field.
We're playing with this a little bit.
There's a relic? Just a random fluctuation or something?
Yeah, I mean, inflation dilutes stuff, but it could just do its job and not a lot more. So if you have a gradient, so part of the universe has different conditions, different Hubble, different phi dot than the other part, then it gives you this effect. There are constraints on this. It has to happen and then die later.
But how big is that?
Over the couple fields.
How big is the amplitude?
The difference between them? Yeah, so at low L, it's a 10% effect, around here, like 0.07, the amplitude. And then up here, it's like a 5% thing. I think not, but I'm not totally sure. I tried to look at this earlier. Hey, Chiro, do you know if this dipole asymmetry, power asymmetry, is lined up with anything local?
Oh, they show the direction, right?
Yeah.
It was, I think, close to actual dipole. I'm just looking at the figure. Due to Earth motion. Here we go.
Okay, well, there is an obvious coincidence problem.